Okay, good morning, everybody. First of all, just a tremendous Yasher Koach to everybody for completing the first week of Gemar Bootcamp. It has been a packed first week, and we're looking forward to continuing in our quest for clarity in Gemar Hashem. And a tremendous Yasher Koach to YU and to Reach, to Rabbi Penner, to Rabbi Yaakov Taubes. It's always such a pleasure to work for and to work with such talented people who care about Klal Yisrael so much. Rabbi Shraya and I were talking recently, and everyone's devotion this past week, the whole range, there's such an incredible range of people who are part of this quest, and everyone's devotion has just been unbelievable. Is Rabbi Shraya here?
I'm here.
Thank you.
Oh. The top left of my screen. I don't know if that helps anybody else.
Okay. At least we know. Anyway, it's an unbelievable zechus to have Rabbi Leibowitz on here with us, especially now during COVID season. I think anybody who saw Rabbi Schechter's Sukkim uploaded onto YU Torah has finally realized just how busy the community Rabbanim have been with COVID, in addition to everything else that they do for us. So we finally come to some realization, and it's an unbelievable zechus. We just wanted to say thank you so much to Rabbi Leibowitz for taking the time out of the schedule to share insight and wisdom with us.
Okay, how are we doing this?
So I think Rabbi Shraya and I will each present questions that were submitted. I guess we'll alternate that way. Does that make sense? And we can go until we would imagine that you would have to take care of other things.
Okay, sounds good. Just before we start, I just want to thank both Rabbi Radner and Rabbi Schreier for running this this amazing program. I got a chance to look at the curriculum a little bit, and I think, you know, I sort of wish I had this a number of years ago. Probably would have saved me a lot of hagmas nefesh and trial and error to be able to have this kind of direction. And just to point out the level of wisdom that there is coming, you know, in our yeshiva from some of the young rising stars in the yeshiva is really something spectacular. I was just interviewing a guy for the smicha program, and I asked him, who are the rebbeim you go to take eitzah from? And I'm always expecting, you know, Rav Schechter, Rav Tversky, Rav Rosenzweig. Now, those are the standard answers, which are very, very good answers, by the way. But this fellow said that once in a question and answer session with Rav Aaron Lapiansky, someone asked Rav Aaron Lapiansky how one chooses which rebbeim to form a kesher with when you have so many wonderful rebbeim around the yeshiva. And Rav Lapiansky said it's probably best if you find a rising star who maybe is not as bogged down by the needs of the greater Klal Yisrael and by a community and everything else, and you attach yourself to that rising star. And this fellow said, so I attached myself to the likes of Rabbi Rabbi Schreier, Rabbi Yitzi Radner, and he mentioned one or two other rebbeim from our yeshiva. And I thought that was just such a beautiful answer and a very wise move on his part to find wisdom among the younger Talmidei Chachamim in our yeshiva that I'm so privileged to have. So thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here with you.
Okay, so let's get started. Thank you so much. The first question, what are some mistakes that people often make when learning Gemara, but that could have been avoided, and how does Rabbi Leibowitz recommend avoiding them?
So I think a very common mistake that people make is that they work very hard on figuring out what each word of the Gemara means and being able to translate each phrase and each word, but they never take a moment to take a step back and look big picture at what the sugya is actually saying. I mean, certainly at the beginning, when a person is getting their feet wet in learning, there's a tremendous focus on the little picture and not much on the big picture. I remember when I was in Rav Simon's shir in my early admissions year, so Rav Simon used to tell us after we finished each amud of Gemara, you know, stop, Let's take a look back. What were the three things this Gemara spoke about? What were the three points on this Amud of Gemara? You know, just take, and I used that throughout all the years I was teaching in high school. I see some of my Talmidim from high school years on the Zoom here. That and I'm sure Eitan Aryeh, for example, will be able to vouch for this. That when we do a daf of Gemara, it's always okay. What were the main points that came out of this Amud of Gemara or the next Amud of Gemara? And just to highlight on the side of the Gemara. Oh, the Gemara had one question and three rayas in terms of how we pass it. Because sometimes you could translate each word, but you don't see the big picture of what the Gemara is doing. So all it takes is to step back for a minute and think about it, as opposed to just, okay, now I can translate that, so let's move on to the next thing. No, just take a step back and look at the big picture. So I think that's a very important thing that a lot of people might miss in the anxiety of trying to be able to get every single word down. You know, it's also important to understand the layers of the Gemara. Who's a Tana? Who's an Amora? Who's an early Amora? Later Amora? And that's just a matter of knowledge. Just a matter of studying these things, which I think is part of your curriculum, if I'm not mistaken, and knowing the key words that introduce statements of Tanaim and statements of Amoraim. You know, knowing that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Lazar are not the same person, and knowing, you know, just knowing certain basic identifications of the people and what level the Gemara is working on. So that's something that's worthwhile. It's also sometimes a person gets bogged down with a kasha, and sometimes it's a very healthy experience. Like you make a kasha, such a strong kasha that you ask everyone you know, but you can ask everyone you know, but maybe it's not a great idea to get so bogged down that you don't allow yourself to move forward because of the kasha. You know, Rabbi Akiva Eiger very often has questions without answers, and he very often will just write the tzarachiyun. So it's a tzarachiyun, and he didn't stop learning. He continued to become Rabbi Akiva Eiger, even though he had many things that were tzarachiyun. Sometimes Rabbi Akiva Eiger writes Hashem Yair saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should enlighten my eyes. He doesn't just write the tzarachiyun. There's a difference between the two. Rabbi Akiva Eiger writes the tzarachiyun, it's usually a question that he has from some other maramakum. That there's another sugya that doesn't seem to fit perfectly well over here. Tzarachiyun. Hashem Yair Zeina is a more of a desperate call, that he feels like he can't move on, because usually that's a problem mineu bei. It's a problem within the sugya itself that doesn't work itself out. So we should appreciate that there are two different types of questions. That there are those questions, there are more than two different types, but for our purposes, there are two different types of questions. There are questions that I have a kasha because I once heard, or I once learned, or I saw somewhere else. Okay, that's a kasha, and you could ask, you should ask that kasha. You should try to answer that kasha if you can, but it shouldn't freeze you in place. It shouldn't stop you from going forward. But sometimes you have a kasha that, like, the words just don't make sense. Meaning the Gemara, you don't see how the Gemara's answer answers the Gemara's question. So that's a Hashem Yair Zeina. That's like, you know, you can't really move forward until you have within the sugya how the sugya itself actually works. Yeah, those are the three that I would identify.
So move on to question two. How important is it to learn with a chavrusa, and what if I like learning by myself?
Yeah, so it's pretty important to learn with a chavrusa. Chazal speak about the importance of learning together with somebody else. Chazal even are willing to sacrifice other halachos in order to be allowed to learn with a chavrusa. We just had the pasuk in the sixth parasha, es behev besufa, so Chazal darshan, that afilu avu b'no, ravu talmido, that even if a father and son or a rebbe and talmud are learning together, they can nasa oyim zelazeh, they can be like enemies with each other, and then by the time they finish learning, they become avim zelazeh, they love each other even more. So everyone focuses on how beautiful that is about the shared experience of Torah, that even though you're yelling at each other and screaming at each other the whole time, in the end of the day, it creates a more beautiful relationship, a more loving relationship. But what often gets missed in that Maimer Chazal is that Chazal are telling us that the way you're not allowed to normally talk to a father in learning, you're allowed to talk to a father that way. The way you're not allowed to normally talk to a Rebbe, when you're talking and learning, you're allowed to talk that way. They're arguing with each other. You're pushing back. You're not allowed to push back on a father about any other matter. He says he supports Trump or hates Trump or whatever. Everyone's in one of those two categories. So, and you push back in the other direction. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to push back your father on anything. But in learning, you're allowed to push back. It's encouraged. You're supposed to push back. Okay, the Rush has a practice, that the Torah father has a practice when he disagrees with his father, the Rush, if he could find another Rishon that holds like the Rush, he'll try to disagree with the other guy, you know, but in order not to make it as obvious that he's arguing with the Rush. But he wouldn't settle for something that his father says just because it's his father. In learning, you're allowed to push back, because that's how important it is to have the give and take of a chavrusa. It's a very important dynamic to have. Chazal speak very negatively about Tamiri Chamur Yoshim Bad Bivad, that sit all alone and they learn all alone. I remember when I was in Keren Biavna, I wanted to learn by myself for morning seder for a certain tkufa, and my Rebbe Rav Silver Shlita actually encouraged it. He thought that it wasn't a bad idea, but he said to me that you have to be careful, that even when you're learning alone, you should never be learning alone. Meaning, even if you're not formally with a chavrusa, you should always be talking and learning with other people. It should never be a total alone experience. You're going to miss way too much. You're not going to have anyone to test your ideas against. You're not going to have anyone to test your understanding. But when God willing, we should soon be able to return to a Beis Medrash atmosphere and a Beis Medrash environment. And when you're learning through something, there's so much value in talking things over with the other chavrusas in the Beis Medrash, or with the other people in the Beis Medrash, the other lomdim in the Beis Medrash. I don't think Chazal meant when they say to be Yoshiv Bad Bevad that if ever you sit down in front of a Gemara by yourself, that you're doing an Aveira. I think what they meant to say is that you should always have people that you talk to and learning. Rav Silver told me at that time, a Maisa, that when Rav Hutner, Zechar Levracha, was a Bachar in Slabodka, so he was learning by himself. Very often, great geniuses feel stifled by chavrusas. When you have great geniuses, they feel like that their mind is just so expansive, and they can't learn with another person. They have to learn by themselves. Who is Rav Soloveitchik's chavrusa? He had one chavrusa, I think, his entire life, and that was his father. And after that, I don't think he had any chavrusas. He was all of his learning was by himself. It's just his mind couldn't be contained by a chavrusa. It had to be. I'm sure he spoke in learning with anybody and everybody. Tov Luchnesin said that Rav Soloveitchik he was always thinking and learning, even when he wasn't learning. When he was walking around, he was constantly working through the sugya. So whenever he'd meet other Talmidei Chacham, of course, he would always be talking and learning to other people. So Rav Hutner, when he was a Bachur, was a genius, obviously, and he was sitting there learning by himself. And the altar of Slobodka, who was like a father figure, you have to realize, when you'd go to yeshiva back in those days, it wasn't like you'd go to yeshiva and then come home every Shabbos, you know, like you'd go to when Rav Ruderman was a Bachar in Slobodka, his father died and the altar didn't tell him, because there was nothing that he could do. He couldn't travel back, and he couldn't. The altar said Kaddish for Rav Ruderman's father. He told him like 8 months later or something that his father died. Crazy. So it's a totally different experience. So the altar was very much a father figure for the Bachrim. So the altar came over to Rav Hutner and he said, where's your chavrusa? So Rav Hutner said, I don't have one. So he said, you need to learn with the chavrusa. You can't learn by yourself. You got to learn with the chavrusa. He said, but I don't want one. He said, too bad. Tomorrow I'm going to come and check on you, and you need to have a chavrusa. So the next day, Rav Hutner is sitting there learning all alone again, and the altar comes over to him and he says, do you have a chavrusa? And he says, Rav Hutner says, yes, I found a chavrusa. So he says, so where is he? He said, oh, my chavrusa is my Yetzer Hara. So the altar said, at least let it be your Yetzer Tov. He said, no, my Yetzer Hara is much, much smarter. So that was his way of dealing with it. But meaning it's not terrible if a person wants to learn better. So you should realize that conventions usually are conventions for a reason. The fact that conventionally in yeshivas people learn with chavrusa, usually that's there for a reason. And most people are able to focus better if they have someone to work with. If they're all alone, it's sometimes very, very challenging to focus. And a person has to be really honest with themselves whether they really work better by themselves than they do with chavrusa. I certainly, certainly would not recommend spending all day learning by yourself. At least have chavrusas, maybe not for all three siddharim, but at least two out of the three siddharim to have chavrusas. It seems to be the better way to go about learning. But just most important, I think, is that you have someone to bounce ideas off of, someone to ask questions to, and to talk in learning with, even peers, even people who are not better than you in learning. I think that's a very important element of development of a Talmud Chacham.
To what extent is it wise to use resources like Artscroll or Safaria? And what about resources like YU Torah or listening to Shiurim on YU Torah instead of formal Shiurim with Rebbeim?
Yeah, okay. So those are obviously good problems to have. You know, that a lot of times people raise questions. Is this way of learning Torah that is becoming so popular, is it really a good thing? And the answer usually is more Torah is good. You know, regardless, more Torah is always better. Nevertheless, one has to understand the best way to utilize all the different methods and tools that are out there. Meaning, if you're going to ask me, if someone is, you know, I drove back home, I was in Camp Cayley for Shabbos, I drove back home last night, so what's a better use of my time when I'm on the road? Should I be listening to music, you know, last chance before the 3 weeks or something? Should I be listening to music, or should I be listening to an enjoyable shiur on YU Torah? So someone once told me, if you're learning through YU Torah, you don't really have a Rebbe, and you know, but you know, when you really don't have a Rebbe, when you just stop listening to sports radio or something like that, that's certainly no better. You know, obviously, it's much, much better to fill that time with Torah learning than it is not to fill that time with Torah learning. A person does need a Rebbe, though. I find, you know, when YU Torah launched the app last year, I guess a year and a half ago or so, they launched the app. So they had like this get together in the yeshiva where there was a panel discussion. First Rav Schechter spoke a little bit, then there was a panel discussion with a few people, I think Rav Moshe Zvi Weinberg and Rav Shai Schechter and me and I forget who else. Oh, and the principal of Central, we were all on a panel and we were discussing certain matters. So one of the, you know, relating to Torah and the internet, and this was one of the issues, like, can a person really have a connection with a Rebbe when they're learning online? And I think that my experience is that people who are learning from an online shiur, it's not the same as learning in a classroom in that you may feel you know the Rebbe very well, but the Rebbe doesn't know you very well. And part of the experience of learning is to have a Rebbe who not only that you know, but knows you as well. So I discourage guys, let's say, in the Smicha program who say, oh, I'm going to learn Yoredei, I'm going to listen to all of your Shiurim online, and then I'll take your Bechinas. Then you didn't really have a Rebbe, meaning you had an experience of hearing a lot of things from one particular person, but you didn't really have a Rebbe. Now, my experience in posting Shiurim on YU Torah and the like, is that ultimately most people feel that. They feel that they're lacking if all of their learning comes from someone that they have no contact with. And ultimately, they reach out and they try to make a kesher. And all the time, you know, if you could track all the emails that get sent to people because of Shiurim that they've given on YU Torah, and very often the emails that are sent are not really because there's a major issue that they have. They just want to be known. They just want to create some sort of kesher. And I think that people work hard. Excuse me. They work hard to do that, and that's an important step. Obviously, nothing beats having a Rebbe in person. So that's as far as like internet learning. As far as like Safaria and Artscroll, it's like become like a favorite pastime in yeshivas, like to bash Artscroll. Artscroll is wonderful. It really, one of my Talmidim and Kaylee Kola last summer, when we went to visit Marashah Kola, we had a question and answer session with Rav Mordechai Willig. So one of them asked him this question, and he said, I don't know, you're going to tell me that a guy who finishes Shas several times using an Artscroll is doing something wrong? I mean, a guy who finishes Shas is a guy who finishes Shas. He was able to learn. I would just add to that clearly it's not the best way to learn through a sugya, is just by going through the art scroll. You know, the Gemara just in yesterday's daf refers to Torah as a michshal. Says that the Navi refers to Torah as a michshal. Why does the Navi refer to Torah as a michshal? Because it's something that you can only acquire when you're nichshalba, when you stumble in it first, and that a person can't, it can't come easily. If it comes easily, it doesn't become a part of you. It doesn't become something that you remember well and that you really connect to. People tend to connect with that which they had to struggle with. So there is a value, a significant value value in struggling through the sugya and trying to figure out the svara. Why does, what's the nekudas hamachlokas between Rav and Abaye? Why does Tosas understand it this way and the Rashba understand it that way? Why does Rashi formulate, his pshat with these words and not with those words? You know, it is important to struggle through something. However, I do not believe that when the Gemara says that you should be nichshal in Torah, that you should struggle and stumble and, trial and error, I do not believe they were talking about, identifying like certain obscure Aramaic words and just what they mean. You know, if the Gemara is talking about certain vegetables, that I should just rack my head, go through every vegetable I can think of until I figure out which vegetable the Gemara is talking about. I think that's pure batala. Meaning, first of all, you're never going to figure it out. So it may be better in such a case to look at an art scroll. It used to be a jastro, okay, but look at an art scroll and see what it is. Just yesterday, I was giving the Daf Yomi Shir in Camp Kaylee, and the camp isn't running, but they have like a hotel running there, for visiting families. So I was standing like 30 feet away from everyone giving a shir. And when the Gemara went through the 18 items of clothing that a person can reasonably wear at the same time, looking like a mensch. So you can't identify we don't dress that way anymore. We don't have 18 items of clothing anymore. So, and a tie wasn't one of them. Like, you can't identify what they are. So I said, anyone have an art scroll over here? Okay, this word. The guy says, it means breeches. I said, okay, what are breeches? I said, you mean brooch? He said, no, it says breech, not brooch. I'm like, okay, what's a breech? So, okay, so it means some sort of sock or something like that. But, we can sit there and break your head for 20 hours figuring out what a breech is. I mean, there's no, I think in for such cases, the art scroll is a very useful tool. The other place it comes in very useful is once you've worked through a sugya and you're not sure if maybe you missed something or maybe like, you're ready to move on, you think you got it, but you're not sure maybe there was like some nuance that you missed. It's kedai to read through afterwards and make sure that that you didn't miss some obvious point. So again, two separate questions over here. There's the use of like internet learning, which I think is very, very valuable, especially when it comes to filling time that otherwise would not be used for learning. Or if there's like a particular topic you're interested in, you want to know all about Geirus and you happen to not be learning, not have access to any shiurim in your community about Geirus, but you can listen to like Rabbi Sablovsky's, six part series from Y.U. Smicha on Geirus, and you can have a real picture of the sugyas related to Geirus. So that's a very wonderful way to master a particular topic. So it's good for filling time that otherwise wouldn't be used for learning to master a particular topic. And if you're going to learn with a Rebbe through the internet, to ultimately reach out and make sure that there is some sort of actual personal connection with that Rebbe. And then the other question as far as the art scroll, and I don't use Sephardi so much, so I'm not really sure exactly how it's used. My understanding is that it's more used to make Mar Makovo sheets, but I could be wrong about that. But to the extent that you're going to use those kinds of tools, best used to translate words that you otherwise wouldn't be able to translate, or to go over a sugya after you've already worked through the sugya.
Shifting a little bit, the last of the question is, people have told me that it's too late in life for them to pick up learning Gemara. What would Rebbe respond to someone saying that?
I would say you should look at people who can be role models and heroes in this regard. There are people out there that have picked up learning very late in life. People often say that, when I retire, I'm going to learn. But very few people actually do that when they retire. But there are people that do. There are people that do not have a strong learning background. And when they retire from work, they start learning, whether it be starting with the Daf Yomi or starting with the Chavrusa or even starting with, Chumash and Rashi Chavrusa or Chumash and Rashi Shir. And you'd be amazed at what people can accomplish, even later on in life. Of course, our brains are most flexible and most impressionable, most able to advance quickly and most malleable when we are young. And that's just, brain science pretty much tells us that. But people can accomplish a great deal even much later in life. And I don't even mean like Rabbi Akiva. I don't even mean like, you know, at the age of 40, even well past the age of 40, people can accomplish a great deal and can actually become at least Yodei Sefer and perhaps even Talmidei Chachamim by dedicating serious time to learning later on in life. I think I met a guy at the Sima Shas this year, I think, who started Shas. He started Daf Yomi when he was 83. And that he had never really learned Gemara before, but he decided now it's time to start. At the age of 90, he finished Shas for the first time. No, not so bad, right? You know, you can accomplish a lot a little bit later on in life. Yeah, I think that's you know, a person has. What do we say about Sari Imenu, right? Rashi on Chumash, that when the years of Sara's life are described in the Chumash as 100 years and 20 years and 7 years, so Kulam Shavim Latova. So Rav Yosef Nechemiah Kornitzer points out that Kulam Shavim Latova probably doesn't just mean that they were all good and she was tzadekes through and through, but it means that Kulam Shavim Latova, that the growth mindset that she had when she was 20, which is when a person is like in prime growth mode, hopefully, continued when she was 100 years old. She was still looking to do more. She was still looking to grow even further. So that's something that a person, you know, if Rav Asher Weiss once remarked to me that youth is not an age, it's a mindset. And if a person has a mindset of wanting to grow, he mentioned this in a couple of contexts. Once I had the opportunity to be on a boat. Rav Asher Weiss needed a break a little bit. So someone in Farakwe took him out on a boat ride and invited me to come with him. So he was Rav Shai Shechter and me and Rav Asher Weiss and the guy driving the boat, essentially. So we were out on this boat ride. And Rav Asher says to me, "No, Arya, you go on boats often?" So I'm like, "No, only when Rav Asher Weiss is on them. You know? Otherwise, I'm not really that interested." And he said, "You don't get old when you," he said, you don't stop having fun when you get old. You get old when you stop having fun." So, you know, so he's, so in that context, he mentioned to me that youth is a mindset, that if you're interested in exploring new things and having enjoying yourself, so then you're still young. And then again, he mentioned it with the pandemic that we're going through right now. He said that, you know, people think that the old people are, you know, they're willing to sacrifice the nursing homes. They're willing to sacrifice the old people who have lived all their years already. So we don't, that's not the Jewish mindset at all. We look at the older generation as the most important people, as the Einei Ha'eda, but also old people are very often the youngest people. Old people are very often, you know, people who are the most youthful in terms of their idealism and their willingness to grow. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've spoken to guys who just got back from Shana Bet in Eretz Yisrael, and I'll ask a guy, like, "What's your goal in the next few years?" When I was teaching at Landers and Landers, when I was teaching at YU, I'm teaching YU now, you know, your goal in YU, or, you know, when I was previously in TR, "What's your goal in the next few years?" And how many times a guy will say something like, "Oh, my goal is that I should maintain, I should keep whatever I got in Israel." What a horrible goal that is. Your goal is to stay the same? That's the goal? The goal is at the age of 20, you decided I'm done growing. That's it. I'm finished. Now the rest of my life, the next 100 years, is a holding pattern. I'm just going to try to stay where I am. That's horrible, right? You would hope that the goal will always be to grow, will always be to advance, will always be to move to the next level, no matter how old you are. When you're 50 years old and 70 years old and 100 years old, and that's something that a person is capable of, and that's the whole. Of course, as long as the Kodesh Baruch Hu gives you air to breathe, and it gives you the ability to think and the ability to learn, so of course you're supposed to learn more and become a greater Talmid Chacham. We didn't find that Rav Eliyashiv at the end of his life said, "You know what? I'm Rav Eliyashiv. I retire." You know, the age, he sat down when he was 6 years old, and he didn't stop till he was 106, and he stopped breathing. That was it. He just learned the whole time. He didn't stop learning, didn't stop growing, didn't stop trying to strive in his learning. So I think no matter what age, a person always has to be looking to grow.
Okay, Rabbi Leibowitz, please remind me to tell you later about my trip with Rabbi Weiss bungee jumping. Unbelievable, just unbelievable. So the next question, how much time should one spend on Ion and how much time should one spend on learning the Kiev?
Yeah, so if I could say something a little controversial, I think a person should spend zero time on each of them. There is a way to learn and a person should learn. Really, ideally, long-term. Meaning when you're younger, I understand that you need to learn how to read Gemaras and therefore it helps to just read through a lot even if you don't fully understand it. And you need to learn basic skills of how to analyze a Gemara and therefore maybe it helps to go very, very slowly in one Seder a day to work on those skills of how to analyze a Gemara. Long-term, that's not the goal. Long-term, you want to know how to learn. None of our Gedolei Yisrael had a Bekiyas Seder and an Iyud Seder. I would argue certainly throughout their lives, meaning they would learn. They would learn with the basic Rishonim, try to understand the sugyas, try to understand what the Rishonim were saying, and the Iyun came Memela. Rav Shach wrote many, many letters to Yeshiva Bachrim. People used to write to him with all their struggles, and most Yeshiva Bachrim deal with this question. This is not a new question. So when they printed Rav Shach's letters, they printed, and the Stipler also, they printed all the letters, even though he dealt with the same thing 1,000 times. So you have like 1,000 letters in a row, where he basically says the same thing. So Rav Shach writes in all of his letters, you shouldn't have a knee and say it, you shouldn't have a bikini, say it, learn a couple of blood a week, and learn them well, and learn them with the Gemara Rashi, tells us the basic Rishonim, the Rash, the Ran, the Rashba. You know, you don't have to find every Rishon that ever existed, every Taisvas Chachmei Africa or something. I don't know. You don't have to find every Rishon that ever existed on any Sugya. Just learn through the major Rishonim in the Sugya, some major Achronim, Marsha, Pnei Yeshua, you know, some of the classics, to get a sense of what the Sugya is talking about, what the major issues are in the Sugya, and then go weiter and obviously with a good amount of chazara, but I think that's the way our Gedolei Yisrael learned, and that's a recipe for success. Now, I remember when I was in Kerem Yavne, there's a Rebbe there, still a Rebbe there, Rav Stav, Rav Moshe Stav. It's a phenomenal Talmud Chacham. He visited YU this year, actually. So I was not a Talmud of Rav Stav's, but I was always inspired by his talks outside of Shir. Sometimes he would say clever things. You know, he would often say very clever things. So in one question-answer session, Rav Stav once remarked, he said that, you know, if you want to become a lawyer, you go to law school for 3 years, you study exactly the books they tell you to study, exactly how they tell you to study them, and then 3 years later, you take an exam and you're a lawyer. He said, if you want to become a doctor, you go to medical school for 4 years, you study exactly the books they tell you to study, you study them exactly how they tell you to study them, and then you take exams and you're going to be a doctor. He said, if you want to become a Talmud Chacham, you go to yeshiva for 5 years, you study exactly the books they tell you to study, you study them exactly how they tell you to study them, and after 5 years, you're an Am Haaretz. And his point was that he found that people sometimes aren't doing it right. They're not focused on the right things, which is, I guess, what you guys are trying to accomplish over here. Rabbi Rainer and Rabbi Schreier are trying to accomplish is to get people to do it right, to know what's worth focusing on and what's not worth focusing on. What are the basic skills you need to make sure that you're not wasting time on things that you shouldn't be wasting time on, and that you're able, and on the positive side, that you're able to zone in on those things that are important. When you hit a shas sugya, a shas topic, you can't just see the words enos and mitzvos chavilos and just say, ah, something about bundles, let's move on. No, that's like a shas topic. You better take a moment and a few moments and focus on that. Enos and mitzvos chavilos or something like that. You better be very focused on those things. So, you know, the split between Ian and Bekiyas, I think, is overplayed. And I realize that that's somewhat controversial because in a standard in yeshivas is they tell you, you know, your bikiyah should be Gemara Rashi and just learn, you know, as many glad as you possibly can. And your Iyun should be as slow as possibly can be. I'm not such a fan of that. I think you should try to bridge the gap a little bit between the Iyun and the bikiyahs. You should understand the Gemaras that you do bikiyahs, and you should cover many sugyas be Iyun, not just, you know, the first three blood of the Masech.
A little bit of a follow-up. What's the proper way to do Chazara? How many times should one do Chazara? Should we be Chazaring every Rashi and Tosos on a daf? And especially regarding Chazaring Bekiyas and Ion, along the lines of what Rebbe was just saying, is there a difference between a different stage in somebody's learning?
Yeah, Chazara is one of the greatest challenges in learning. I think the greatest challenge of Chazara is that people assume that if they do Chazara, they'll automatically remember it forever. And that's not true. Meaning if you do Chazara in the moment, you might remember it in the moment, or you might have a better understanding of it right now. But unless Chazara is a constant, then it's not going to really help as far as long-term memory. It has to be something that you do in the moment, and then you continue to do later. Rav Shachter used to tell us, don't do Chazara right away. Give yourself time to forget before you do Chazara. So Rav Shachter sometimes doesn't understand how humans' brains work, and he assumes it'll take you 6 months to forget. So after 6 months, you should do Chazara. No, it takes me 6 seconds to forget. So I think it's very important to do Chazara right then and there. But I think we also sometimes define Chazara incorrectly. When you go through a Gemara over and over and over again, when you constantly live through a Gemara over and over and over again, then the first time through, that's not called Chazara. That's just understanding the Gemara. That's just working it through the first time. At least the first four times you read through a sugya, that's not Chazara. Meaning people think they did Chazara because they read through the Gemara that they did today four times. Now you're still working it through. You're still trying to analyze the sugya. You haven't yet had time to sleep on the sugya at all. So that's not Chazara. Chazara is when after you've learned and then you go back to it. I think I was just on Shabbos. I was just reading from the Reb Chaim Shmulevitz biography. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz's father was a Rosh Shiva himself, and the Rosh Shiva of Grodno before of Shemeshkat, actually. So he said that Reb Bachrin used to say that they would go over to Reb Chaim Shmulevitz's father and they would hear him learning. And when he was learning a Rambam, you could hear him read the Rambam 15, 20 times, just reading the words over and over again 15, 20 times before he moved on. What was he doing? He was doing his Chazara? No, it wasn't Chazara. He was thinking through each and every word. He was thinking through how to analyze it. Chazara comes later. So when a person does Chazara, I think it's important to be creative in your Chazara, because the big challenge with Chazara is that it gets boring. It's just it's very monotonous. If you're not making it more of an adventure, so there should be some challenge in the Chazara. The Chazara shouldn't just be okay, I'll read through all the Gemaras again. No, this time I'm gonna read through the Gemaras and I'm gonna write a flow chart, or I'm gonna read through the Gemaras and I'm gonna summarize the main points of the Gemara, or I'm gonna come up with a mnemonic to remember I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Zichru program, which is a fascinating way of doing Chazara. It's just it's not a word for word Chazara, but just a Chazara of the overview of the daf or the overview of the Masechta. Something that you can, and like I mentioned before, Rebbe Zin Lichtenstein said that her father was always thinking and learning. That's really the difference between people who remember the learning and people who don't. It's not really how smart the people are for the most part. It's how much time they spend in their downtime thinking and learning. Like when you shut the Gemara, so now I think about lunch and I think about whatever else I want to do today. Or as I'm walking to shul, I'm walking back from shul, am I thinking and learning? As I'm driving, am I commute in? Am I thinking and learning? And when you're thinking, that's Chazara also. That's also Chazara. So maybe I'm not being clear over here. What I would suggest is two things. First of all, that Chazara should be active. You should do something while you're Chazaring, whether it be taking notes, because writing definitely helps with remembering. The Gemara in Masechet Bava Basra tells us that they heard from the other side that Ashrei Misha Bolakam V'Talmudo Biyado, that in Shemayim they're saying that fortunate is someone who comes to Shemayim and he has Talmudo Biyado, and Marsha famously explains that means someone who takes notes in his learning, because when you write things, it definitely helps you remember. It also helps you formulate the ideas better if you have to put pen to paper and write them down. So Chazara should be an active process, a way to summarize the Gemara, a way to do something new with the Gemara that you haven't done before. I remember when I was in yeshiva, the way I used to Chazar was I learned Gemara Rashi Tosos, my Bekiya Seder, in the afternoon. And then when I would Chazar Bekiya Seder, I had to try to find the Chiddush of the Ritva in each sugya. Just make something new come out of that sugya that I didn't see before. That I thought was very helpful for me at that stage in life for Chazara. So it should be active, and it should also be constant. You know what I mean? By constant, is a person should train themselves to think and learning all the time. To look at the world and think and learning. You see a situation come up and think about what does the Torah have to say about that. And then when you have downtime, think about what you were just learning that day. How many times you have a yeshiva bachur? Someone says, they meet a Talmud Chacham, and Talmud Chacham says, "What's your name?" And they remember their name. They say their name. What are you learning? Bav Metzia. Oh, which sugi are you holding in? And they won't say sugi. Daf, right? They'll say daf. say what sugi you're holding in. Why won't they say what sugi they're learning? They don't remember what sugi they're learning. But if you're thinking about it all day, if you're thinking about the sugi that you're learning all day, so you're not going to respond with a daf, which may or may be or may not be the correct daf actually. But they're going to respond with the sugi that they're actually learning. So I think that's an important element of Chazara as well. But I'm not minimizing the challenge. The challenge is very, very great in terms of Chazara. And realize at the end of the day, we're all human. And very few people will remember everything forever. But we do our best.
So the next question, when there's a limited amount of time to learn, what, if anything, should people be learning besides Gemara? Does it make a difference if one is in high school, yeshiva in Israel, college, working, or retired?
Yeah, so, I mean, Gemara takes up the bulk of our time, as it should. The Rambam writes in the Talmud Torah that since Gemara takes the longest to really master, and it requires the greatest effort, so it should take the bulk of our learning time. Of course, the Rambam was assuming basic foundations that often we don't have. He was assuming that you've been through Tanakh, that you've been through Shisha, Sidrei, Mishnah, and then you spend your time the majority of the time learning Gemara with occasional Chazara of Tanakh and Mishnah. But it's always startling to me, the Gemara talks about Shlish B'Mishnah, Shlish B'Mikra, Shlish B'Talmud, that you spend one-third of your day in Tanakh, one-third of your time in Mishnah, one-third of your time in Gemara, and the Rambam says, yeah, that's B'Tchilas Talmudah, that's when the person is beginning to learn. But then when he advances, he pretty much learns Talmud Bavli constantly with an occasional refresher on Tanakh and Mishnah. And what about Musar? And what about Machshava? And what about, meaning there are so many other areas of learning that don't seem to be covered in Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud. So clearly the assumption is that Talmud encapsulates a lot more than we think it does. Meaning, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein used to say that the best Musar Sefer is the Gemara. You just can't skip the Agaritas. You have to read all the Gemaras, and then you'll see that the best Musar emerges from the Gemara itself. So there is certainly, Rav Shach likes to say about Masilas Yesharim, he just tells you what all the Ma'amari Chazal are. He just puts them together for you nicely. But they're all based on, it's all Ma'amari Chazal. If you know how to read the Ma'amari Chazal, you don't need the Masilas Yesharim. Okay? Most of us do need the Masilas Yesharim. We do need to learn from the Sforim that do put it together for us. So what should we prioritize? I would say to a twofold approach. Number one, sometimes a person has a proclivity, an inclination toward a certain area of limud. I knew at a very young age I loved learning halacha. When I was 18 years old, I opened up a Mishnah Berurah. I opened up, started learning sugyas la halacha in the Gemara. When I was learning ksubas, I started going through the Torah and Beis Yosef and Shulchan Aruch and Eben Ezer, and I was just like, "Ooh, this seems to me to be the way to learn," and it just spoke to me. So that was something that really talked to me. So a person learns b'makom shalibo chafetz. There are some people that have a knack or a deep connection to learning, Sifrei Maharal, to learning other things that just really talk to them, and that absolutely helps your learning when you feel like you're learning what you should be learning. So that absolutely helps. So that's one thing to definitely think about. The other thing to think about, I think again, regardless of station in life, is to think about, are there any basic holes in your learning? Meaning, when you go up, as one of my old colleagues and mentors, Rav David Willick Shlita, always says, when you go up for the Big Bechina, Lachem Ehev Asher, right? The Big Bechina after 120 years. He lives his life preparing for the Big Bechina after 120 years. So as you go up for the Big Bechina after 120 years, right? So if you don't know, the latest Sefer that was put out, I don't know, by some gay, you don't know the latest volume of Hakona Olomo, you know, or something like that. You know, they're gonna say, oy vey, how do you not know this? Is this, this is like a major, it's not a major hole in your learning. It's a great safer, but it's not a major hole in a person's learning. And so, but there are certain things, like if you've never seen Tanakh, you know, like, that's like, you know, one of the rebbeim in the DRS, when we used to teach, we used to have no idea how to teach Tanakh. They fixed it a lot since then. But when they were teaching Yirmiyahu to ninth graders, there you have it. We had no idea what we were doing. One of the rebbeim said, Yirmiyahu is going to be so much better next year because now I know what happens at the end of the book. You know, like, so like if you've never like actually seen like certain basic things, like you've never, so you should try to fill like major gaps, like major holes that you might be missing in your learning. Not all at once. It doesn't have to happen all. You know, Torah growth can happen slow and steady, and you'd be surprised how much you can accomplish by going slow and steady. Just a few pesukim a day or something like that. You'd be surprised how much you could accomplish over time. When you try to solve all the gaps at one time, so then you try to plug all the holes at one time, you're not going to get anywhere. But I think those are the two things that a person should look at in the time that they're not, you know, doing their primary limud. Where does, what talks to them, what's going to inspire them to want to learn more because they feel like it's talking to them. And the second is to find the basic gaps in their learning and try to fill in those basic gaps.
What is the biggest piece of advice, tip, or trick that Rebbe would give to a young novice Gemara learner? Young or novice?
Yeah. I would say, first of all, that growth happens exponentially, and don't get dejected if you don't know everything right away. You know, sometimes a guy says, I've been learning the whole year, and I'm still not Rebbe Akiva Eiger. Like, how is that possible? Like, the whole year, of course, doesn't mean the whole year. It means that Elzman, forget about it. I was just learning what it means to be in yeshiva. And then after Sukkot, I came back, and I learned for a couple of months. And now it's by Purim, the Zman is pretty much over. So I learned for like, you know, like almost 5 months, and like I'm still not Rebbe Akiva Eiger. How could that possibly be? So a person shouldn't get frustrated if it happens slowly at the beginning. But also, I'll often tell a guy that they'll be frustrated after having learned for 5 or 6 months and feels that they're not progressing. So, you know, usually, let's say a Shana Aleph boy, let's say, I'll say, take a look back at where you were in learning a year ago. Are you in the same place in learning that you were a year ago? And you think about it that way, and you realize just how you just, your eyes were open to how much more there is to accomplish. So you feel like you haven't accomplished. But when you look retrospectively at where you were and where you are, you realize how growth really does happen exponentially. Chazal tells us, the Gemara tells us that if a person spends 5 years learning and doesn't see a siman bracha in his learning, he should give up. And most of the Mefarshim say that means because that's impossible. Chazal is telling you, give it 5 years. And if you don't see a siman bracha, it's not going to happen. Of course you're going to see a siman bracha. It's impossible that a person who dedicates 5 years to learning is not going to see a siman bracha. So don't feel dejected and realize that growth and learning happens exponentially. And also realize that lefum tsara agra, that much more than how intelligent you are, what your IQ is, your willingness to put in the work is going to be a much greater predictor of what kind of Talmud Chacham you are. I was just talking to my son last night as we were driving back from Kaili, and he was talking about some of the amazing, inspiring people in the YU based Medrash, such as he actually mentioned both Rabbi Ran and Rabbi Schreier. I'm not making that up. He mentioned one other person also as like the people that like are just so amazing and inspire him in learning in the base Medrash. That, you know, and one of the other guys he mentioned happened to have been in my shir in 11th grade and is now like one of the stars of our base Medrash. And I said, in 11th grade he was a good kid. He was a good kid, and he was okay in learning. But he wasn't a super-duper star in learning. I remember his best friend he would always hang out with was much stronger than him in learning. And his best friend is still very strong in learning. But I'm just saying, it's the amount of effort that he put in and just sitting, Yom V'Layla, Bas Mada, to become, far surpass most of his Rebbeim, especially me, and become a great Talmud Chacham. Like, that happens. That actually happens. It's not fake. It's not just stories that you hear. I could tell you dozens and dozens of examples in my own, from my own Talmidim, who just, you know, put their head down and started learning and just put the work in and became with tremendous Yata Dishmaya. So that's one thing I would say. Another thing I would say is Eina Baishan Lama, that a person should not be embarrassed to ask questions and to make connections with Rebbeim. If you have access to Rebbeim, take advantage of that access. Don't be afraid to take advantage of the access that you have to Rebbeim. Those relationships and those stories that you have, even just, you know, just like even the way I'm answering this question, how many of the questions did I answer by saying something that someone told me when I was in Keren Biavne? How long ago was I in Keren Biavne? It was like so many years ago, but just you remember those things that Rebbeim told you when you were younger. So connect yourself to the Rebbeim, ask questions. And also, I would just say, see lots of Gemaras. You know, you're not going to be able to pick up Gemara by focusing all day on five lines of Gemara. See lots and lots of Gemara so you can pick up on the nuances of the Gemara. You can pick up on the tone of the Gemara, what the Gemara sounds like when it asks a question, when it brings a raya, and it will open up all of Shas for you when you see much of Shas. Rabbi Kamenetsky, Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky, one of my great, great Rebbeim, most important influence in my own life and development, used to always tell us as Rebbeim, when he was guiding the Rebbeim, would say the way to learn how to read Gemara is by reading lots of Gemaras. You know, all the tricks and everything else. At the end of the day, if you read lots of Gemaras, you'll pick up on how to read a Gemara. So that would be another bit of advice.
Do we have time for two more questions?
Whatever you want.
Okay. What does Rebbe think about learning from computers or smartphones?
I think the same thing about davening from computers and smartphones. I think it's very distracting. Meaning if when I need to get something done, I cannot sit in this. People think like I'm in this office, there's my Rebbe right there providing inspiration for me, and I have all these svarim all around. You know, I can take you with the camera around the room and show you all the svarim that are here. I'm totally surrounded by svarim. I can never get anything done in this office because there's an internet connection on this computer, as you can plainly see. So I can never get anything done. When I'm here, if I really need to focus, I really need to get something done, I have to go to the dining room. In the dining room, my kids are running around, and this one, the phone is ringing. Much more focused. You know, I leave my phone in this room, leave the computer in this room, go to the dining room where my internet connection doesn't reach. I don't live in a mansion. I just have terrible internet. So I go where the internet connection doesn't reach, and it's amazing. And that's when I write my svarim. I'm only able to write when I'm not here. I've never written a single chapter of my svarim in this room, which you would think would be the best place for learning. So if your computer is not, if your computer is connected to the internet, or you're going to have any notifications that pop up, your phone is not on airplane mode, it is a disaster. Don't do it. Now the question becomes, okay, what if your phone is on airplane mode, your computer is? Okay, so then there's nothing wrong with learning from a computer screen. I would just suggest, you know, for me personally, I still can't do it because I need to be writing while I'm learning. Otherwise, I lose focus. I write in commas, I write in anything that I could. I just need to be active. If I'm not active, I lose focus, especially when I'm learning alone. So sometimes I'm typing on the computer as I'm learning, typing notes of the things that I'm learning. So if you can't write on the screen, you know, like it doesn't, you know, for me, it wouldn't work as well. But the main thing is the distraction. I don't have a fundamental problem with, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't have a fundamental problem with seeing the words on the screen as opposed to, you know, going to Hebrew books and finding the words on, you know, in the Sefer on the screen rather than having the Sefer in your actual hands. I know Rabbi Eitan Feiner has a whole schmooze about you can't kiss a computer screen, you got to kiss the Sefer, and then, you know, and I appreciate all that, I do. But when Rav David Miller came to YU for a couple of years, so the guys were shocked because he didn't schlep his entire library from Eretz Yisrael to YU when he'd come. He came with his iPad and he would learn off of his iPad, and they couldn't believe it. He was learning off of his iPad in the Mishmash. I mean, he knows what he's doing also. He knows how to learn. So I think it's okay.
So I guess for the last question, to move back to Art Scroll, Art Scroll has been progressively translating more and more Sfarim. For example, they started translating Tosfos. It's gotten to the point where they may translate almost everything. I think I did hear a boast that you'll soon be able to have a full base medrash of Art Scroll Sfarim, and that's all you need. So what does Rebbe think about that possibility of everything being translated by Art Scroll?
Yeah, you probably right. You see their advertisements. They have a picture of all of the Art Scroll books. It fills up more than a base medrash. They have so much. They've done so much. I think, you know, it's unfortunate that some people make it like their life's mission to mock Art Scroll. Like, you know, like there are bigger problems facing the Jewish people than the dissemination of more Torah to more people, you know, like, but you don't love the way that they handle the Gemaras about science or something, you know, like, you know, or whatever, or you don't love the fact that that things are made too easy for people or something like that. So no one told you to use it. So use something else. But I think overall, the fact that that more Torah is becoming accessible is overall a very, very great thing, and they do amazing, amazing work. Someone just dropped off for me on around Pesach time the Drushas Haran that Art Scroll did. You try to read a Drushas Haran without the Art Scroll. It's impossible. There's so much Kabbalah in there. There's so many other things in there. He makes, you know, like these fleeting references to entire sugyas that you need to be familiar with, and you have no idea what it, but they did an amazing job. There's a Yid in Lakewood who dedicated many, many, many hours and days and weeks and months, a guy who grew up actually here in Lawrence in the Five Towns, Kielsen, and he put together the Drushas Haran. He did an amazing, amazing job, and I think that makes a wonderful safer from the Rishonim accessible to Amoratsim like me, who otherwise wouldn't be able to learn it, wouldn't be able to really understand it. And it's wonderful. And if you know, Art Scroll doing Tosos, and that's going to help a ninth grader or a tenth grader who's trying to learn all the Tosos and on the top that he's doing Bikias or something, and that's going to help him get a feel for Tosos and help him understand the Tosos. Well, I'm not saying Dafka, ninth grader, tenth grader. It could be anybody, but so what's so terrible about that? I think it's wonderful. We spoke again before about how to use it properly, and that, you know, ideally a person has to struggle in figuring out the svaras and learning and everything else. But these are it's a fantastic thing. Aside from the fact that it's employing Talmidei Chachamim to be able to work in their learning and to advance in their learning and to be productive in their learning and to learn how to write in English properly and to, you know, all of these things, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. I say the same thing that people sometimes ask me about women learning. So generally speaking, I think there are bigger problems that the world faces than more Torah. You know, like, there's more people learning Torah, I think, in general, that's usually a good thing. And if there's more Torah being produced, I think usually that's a good thing. The default position is that that's a good thing until proven to be destructive. I think we have to assume that it's a good thing.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Leibowitz, and thank you for the time and for the insight that can reverberate in our ears and shape our own learning for years to come. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. So have great Hatzlacha. It's so amazing that so many people joined this this year. It's great. Okay, Hatzlacha Rabbi, everybody.
Thank you so much, Rabbi.
And take care.